Okay. Today we do part two of our non-personal materials. Just to remind you, last time we spoke about two groups of items. One is about behemoth man, which is about meat and poultry, and included in that, what we're going to come back to today, was fatty acids and glycerin. That was included last time. We're going to come back to last time we talked about it, if it's really chafed. Today we're going to talk about a different angle of it. That also included about fish and bugs. And the second half of what we spoke about last time was about dairy products, which was about Holvisol and Venus Isol and soft cheese and whey and all kinds of things that have to do with those kinds of stuff. Okay? Today, we talk about different other things that could be traced. And again, the goal here, what we're trying to do here is just give an overview of all these things, like really just touch on these different things, because if we, there are, in essence, less trafe things than kosher things, or classes of trafe things. So if we identify all the trafe things, or what can make something trafe, then that sort of leaves everything else behind as being kosher, so to speak, which is a way of looking at things. Anyhow, okay, so we're going to go through things. So the first is, the first group we're going to talk about are things that have to do with agricultural products. Okay, last time was animal products and dairy products, and now we're talking about agricultural products. Okay, so the first is Machal Yakum. Okay, Chazal were concerned that we would interact with Goyim and that could lead to intermarriage. So they made a whole. They made three different yisurim that go along with those. The three that go together, and they are things that going cook or bake. That bishlakum and pasakum. That the two different yisurim, each with their own twists of how they work. And they also made an issur to wine that a guy touched, because sam yayin. If he was touched it or he poured it, that's it makes sam yayin. So bishlakum and pasakum negeh in a house. If someone's cooking, it's negeh in a factory. If you make food, if you produce food, it's not usually something negeh for a factory for ingredients. Usually ingredients don't come in with bishul or pasakum problems. That's not such a common thing. For consumers, of course, it does. I mean, for consumers, of course, hold on 1 second. I need to see now. Hold on 1 second.
Gotcha, menachem.
Is motor?
They're good, but they
have a brooder. So you say what you want to, I get it. Hold on 1 second. I just on my computer here, I'm sorry. Okay, so Shem Nakum, nothing to do with me. Not my problem. They also asked Gilui and 100 other things that are not Negetas. You know, we said last time, we're not going to talk about things like Petach Hamar that were not Negetas. Anyhow, so for consumers, I'm sorry, for factories, ingredients coming to a factory of Bishlam and Pasakam are not such an issue. But things to do with grape, there are loads of them. So we already spoke once about Bishlakum, and we'll talk about it in the future, that Bishlam and Pasakam at other times. But grape products, ingredients that come from grape, will have questions of sam yayin all over the place. Where was it? Just this week in tartaric acid is in sugar. Okay, you wouldn't know that that's a question of sam yayin. We hope it's mutter, but it's a question of sam yayin.
Tartaric acid and sugar.
See, look at that. Yes, there was in this place. They're using tartaric acid in their sugar.
Regular sugar.
No. It's as far as the balancing the pH of the of when it's finishing. They use tartaric acid in this place. Okay, so you say like
bottle, right?
Yes, it's bottle, and it's we hold this mutter, but yes, and the people don't hold this mutter. Yes, but so what I'm saying is it's all over this. We will one time do a thing just on grape products. There's all kinds of products that could come from grape all over the place that are so to speak ingredient type things. Okay. The next of the agricultural things is things to do with grains, okay? And so one thing, which either you think is very serious or you think is nothing at all, is that American hashgachas, or all the national hashgachas, just about, will give hashgacha to things that are, even if they contain what we call chadash, from the five grains, wheat, rye, spelt, oats, and barley, because most yidden in America are not matpun on that, they'll eat even if food is yashan. So if someone wants to be makbid, most people eat even chadash, and if your person wants to be makbid, or if a hashgacha wants to certify something as being yashan, so then there's all kinds of complications, okay? All things that we have to do, one time, Mitzvah, we'll talk about that, what they have to do for doing that. Spelt and rye in the United States are always yashan. Just the way their planting season grows, they planted before Pesach, and they're harvested after Pesach, so they're always yashan. But for the other ones, for wheat, barley, and which one time is oats. So then for a hashgacha, that's something to think about, or a private person to think about what they have to do. One time we'll talk about
that. And a lot of rye is imported from Canada.
I don't know if it's any worse in Canada. Is that true?
This is right.
Okay, could be. It could be. You might be right. Okay. Okay, now, the next thing to do with grains is that if a Jewish person owns one of those five grains and he makes it into a dough, then there's mitzvah farshas challah. Okay, in order to be chayav in challah, so yes, I mentioned already, it has to be someone Jewish. It has to stop with someone Jewish. It has to have a shir challah, which it's on. It's a shir challah. It has to be that the finished thing that you're going to make is going to have a bracha of mizonis or hamotzi, and it will also have a tar lechem. Okay, so that means is to get all those things together. When we usually think about it, you think of farshas challah for bread, but of course it means for cakes and pizza and cookies and all those kind of things. Also, assume you have a shir challah. But it means you don't have to be mafresh challah for pasta or for oatmeal. Or this week someone asked about they're making raw cookie dough to specifically put into, or actually it was last week, raw cookie dough specifically to go into ice cream. And they're not selling it as raw cookie dough that someone's going to bake. Raw cookie dough is just going to go into ice cream, whose bracha is not a mizorin or a moitzi. So you don't have to be mafresh challah, okay? Because it doesn't have tar lechem, or it's not a moitzi, or if it doesn't have a shir challah, okay?
I was being down on that Shiloh.
Hey, wait,
what's the bracha? I forgot what the bracha was. I don't remember. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I was being down on that Shiloh because I'm Basi Shalom. I want to be micro Basi Shalom. Something on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Be micro Basi Shalom. I buy these ice creams that's cooking dough in it. So I was just thinking, is this a Shiloh over here? Possible here.
Mm-hmm.
I decided it's not.
Right. Good. Okay, we're on the same team now.
I was just thinking about that thing. Whatever. Tomorrow, I'm not sure. The OU, whatever. Just make sure.
Got it. Okay.
You're definitely sure? Are we definitely sure that it's...
No, that's what I thought. Terry Beast thought the same thing also. Happens to be. Yes, well, that depends on what you want to be marked on, you know? It depends on which side of the table you sit on that one, you know?
So you said that it's dough. This is dough. Right. So maybe it's not baked a little bit.
It's not chayav nchal. I have to think about whether the pastel part of it, but I think they go together usually. It's a din in Shin Chav Tes. I just looked it up this week.
So you decided based on it because it's dough.
It says that if you make a thing and you're not going to bake it, with kavanah to never bake it, then it's not chayav nchal.
But what was the context? What's
that
referring to?
Shulchan Aruch. Exactly this kind of case.
Maybe it's a little baked. Eight raw dough and all these?
I don't know what it was for. I don't know what was the case for
there. Maybe it's a little baked, though. I'm just thinking that's what I'm thinking about.
You think maybe it's baked.
It's a drop baked. Yeah, get rid of the hysteria.
Okay, I don't know. Okay, So in talking about it, shir challah, whatever you think you should, let's pick a number. We'll say the shir challah is 5 pounds, whatever the number is, pick a number. If in a factory, what I'm about to say is not going to get, but that's the Jewish ownership has to be that much. So if he owns the whole factory, so you need, yes, if the dough is 5 pounds, he owns a bakery, it has to be 5 pounds. If he's a partner, let's say he's a 10% partner, and the shir is 5 pounds, then it has to be 50 pounds in the batch. Someone who's not Jewish, I'm sorry, someone part of someone not Jewish, you have to have 50 pounds, because the yid shear has to be enough to be chayav and chalan. Okay, when you have the piece that's chal, once you take off the piece, you do the actual hafarshas chala, you have to burn the piece. Until then, it has the din of truma tmeah, and before your mafresh has the din of tevel, both of those, truma tmeah and tevel, both of them you have to kasher if it was put on equipment that was not done properly. If you use the truma or you use the tevel, both of them, if you put them on kelim, you have to kasher those kelim. If you separate a challah, or if you were never mafresh and you have tevel, either one of those, you have to kasher because of
it. Strictly speaking, in the kutzlar, it might be like a chutz nisur, right? It's just a mitzvah.
So you can go listen to that share about that. No, you have to be mafresh. I didn't say you can't. If you mafresh eventually, you're fine. You could be mafresh after. But like, for example, if you remember this 2 years later, then it's too late to do it.
Kasher the kelim?
You have to kasher the kelim, yes.
That's what you're talking about?
Yes, I'll point you to the right page in the book if you want. Okay, that's how I remember it. Okay, we'll look it up afterwards. Okay, when I wrote this, that's what I thought. Okay, we will one day talk about how we do it commercially. Okay, commercially, that's not such a simple thing. That's its own special part of how we do that. Okay, and this reason, this idea that you have to be mafresh challah from if a yid owns his company is one of the two reasons why we track which companies owned by yidden. One is for this, and one is for Pesach. Okay, we have to track if a Jewish-owned company, if they're making potato chips, we don't care. But if they're making something that would be chayav l'challah, then we would care for this reason and for Hilchos Pesach, that they shouldn't have a trouble with Pesach. Okay. Just to help, you shouldn't forget, we're talking agricultural things. So bugs we talked about last time. That's very relevant to agricultural things. But okay. Okay, next. The next group of things are things that have to do with time and place. So one I just mentioned to you. I didn't say anything. From time and place. Let's do that place. Yeah, I'm trying to think where I said that. Okay, anyway, it's coming. Okay, so the first like this. The first is a time and place has to do with Pesach. Okay, that for come Pesach, there's all kinds of extra rules of what makes food kosher. Okay, that you can't have chametz or kidneys. Okay, you can't eat it, and you can't own it, of course, and have hana from it. So wheat and soy and corn and rice, all those things are very popular all over the place. They're used in food chemicals like ethanol, think about like that, vinegar, making fermentations, emulsifiers. So this, they're all over the place. They're so rampant in what we have that they give hashgacha for something for Pesach. Just about everything needs to be special hashgacha on everything, but just about everything. And because it's so complicated, the general rule is that we only give hashgacha for Pesach or hashgacha to Midas. Okay? Not everything. There are some exceptions to that. There are some things that are always kosher Pesach, like a company I went to this week that's kosher Pesach all year round, not under our certification, which was actually not kosher Pesach when I was there. But I'm not going to say. But I'll tell you.
It was all year round, but was not kosher Pesach.
Right. No, it was so simple that it was going to be kosher Pesach that they certified that a mashgiach tamidi. Usually Pesach says kosher Pesach, always a mashgiach tamidi. Here they let it without it, and in fact it was not. But anyhow, that was like a weird exception. But usually things of Pesach are hashgacha tamidi is because of all these complications.
It wasn't a matzah company, right?
It was not a matzah company. No. Mitzvah next week under a matzah company. But if I get in. Okay. Another thing about Pesach is that not only eat it, but if a Yid owned it over Pesach, it's Chomesh over Pesach. Okay? So for people who own a house, in your house, you care about that, of course. If you own a store, you have to care about that. You have to get rid of your Chomesh or do Mechir Chomesh before Pesach. So you shouldn't be over in Bali Roy. If you're over, not just for your personal Isser, yes, of course. You don't want over the Isser, but also the food's going to be us afterwards. Okay? So two things have come up with that in recent years have to do with this Shaila. And one is the one that was like sort of more personal to the CRC is that we came across this whiskey manufacturer who's a Jewish person. He owned this huge whiskey company. It's the whiskeys that he makes are made with chametz. And they're made with chametz and they're aged for many years. So automatically he owned every one of them for over Pesach. Okay? With other things, if he made cookies, we wouldn't be so worried. It would just be a certain amount of time after Pesach. Here it's whiskey, so it's a big. That was a more serious shaila. It wasn't so relevant to the vodka and gin because those are tend to be not made from chametz and they're not aged. But for the whiskeys, that was a whole to do, as you may well remember. That's one thing. The second thing is that most food manufacturing companies, the people who actually make the company, aside from this case, by and large, they're not Jewish owned. You don't have to worry about chametz on the Pesach. And stores, people are sensitive. They know the store that they shop in. If it's owned by a Yid, they have to make sure that they sell the chametz. Okay, but what's come to light is this idea that there are distributors who are Jewish, and they distribute a lot of chametz, a lot of everything. Okay, so now, it turns out like this. When the distributor, if the distributor is Jewish, so the question is, when I pick up a box of pretzels, a bag of pretzels after Pesach, am I getting something that the distributor owned on Pesach or not? Okay, so to try to explain to you, I see five variations for how that could happen. Okay, for what could happen, what the shayla is, okay? We have to figure out who owns this chametz. The story we're talking about here is the manufacturer is not Jewish, and the store owner is not Jewish, and the only person who's Jewish is the distributor. Okay, that's the question we're dealing with. So I'm going to give you five cases of who owned the chametz when. Okay, so in this case, the chametz is the simplest case. The chametz is in the store already before Pesach. Before Pesach, the store already had it. So he had it before Pesach, and on Pesach, and after Pesach. But it's not owned by someone Jewish. Okay, so the din is that it's fine. It's mutter. No problem. It was owned by someone who's not Jewish, so Pesach. What? That's the easiest case. Okay, that's the first case. Okay, we'll move along. And the next case is, it was owned by the distributor before Pesach, and he sold it to the store on Pesach. Okay, so in this case, okay, he owned it before Pesach, and he sold, means is that the third day of Pesach, he sold it to the store. So in this case, even if the distributor did a mechiras chametz, by selling the chametz on Pesach, he was over on Bayiro by doing that. He retook possession of it. He for sure was over on it. So in that case, it's going to be awesome. Okay? When he distributed on Pesach, even had he done a mechiras chametz before Pesach, in the middle of Chol Hamoed, he went and sold it to a store, so and the store is not Jewish. Why are you making faces?
I don't know. That's true.
Because?
He sold it, so it's not his. So he sold something, which is not his.
He was everything. Okay, so Ramosha, the famous Chuba who talks about the only thing he says is, but if he sells it on Pesach, then it's usher. Ramosha, now the case Ramosha is talking about, the Waldown's case, is it's a supermarket. So if he sold it on chametz, the person who bought it didn't care about chametz and Pesach. That person didn't care. The person that's not a gay to us. But of course, he says, no, it would be usher. But that's because he was talking about a supermarket. So the person who buys cookies on Pesach doesn't care about chametz. So we don't care about that person. It's not relevant.
He sold something which was not his.
So Ramosha says, no, but the act of selling it is a stealing back from the guy. He's stealing it back from the guy. So because he first of all, so he took repossession of it, and because he's chayav achrayus, Ramosha says, for sure, he says it's usher at that point. Okay, that's our second case. Okay, you can think, mull that one over. Now the third case is the distributor. I don't know what's going on in this case. I see something wrong here. But anyway, okay. The distributor had it before Pesach, and he kept it on Pesach. Okay, he kept it, and he just gave it, he sold it to the store after Pesach. Okay.
And it was sold over Pesach?
So the distributor...
He sold it to the guy over Pesach?
So now... Why?
After Pesach.
No, so he sold it to, he wasn't if they had a Mechiris Chametz. So now it's going to depend. Okay, this case is a depend case. Okay, the distributor sold it to the store after Pesach. Okay, so now, what this...
Going back to case B, there was a Mechiris Chametz or not?
Yes, there was some, even if there, I said even in case, okay. Even if there was a Mechiris Chametz, since on Pesach he sold it, the Gemara says in that case it's usher, because he's, this act of selling it makes it usher. Okay, case C is, he sold it to the store after Pesach. Okay, so the distributor had it from before Pesach, and he kept it through Pesach, and then he sold it to the store after Pesach. So here, there's two parts to think about. One is, Did he have Mechiras Chametz? Okay, if he had Mechiras Chametz, that would be one thing. So if he didn't have Mechiras Chametz, it would be, of course, no good. Second, if he had Mechiras Chametz, then there's the question is, does that help? He ran his business like usual, so Rav Moshe says it's okay. Other people were not so thrilled about that. So that's a question. In that case C, should it be mutter or should it be usher in that case? Okay.
Sorry, I didn't follow. So what's the shaila?
The distributor is Jewish.
Okay.
He owned chametz on Pesach.
I thought you said he sold it.
He had mechiras chametz. So first of all, he had to have mechiras chametz. Not every distributor has mechiras chametz. Okay. The second thing is, not everyone agrees with what Rav Moshe said. That if a guy has mechiras chametz and if he runs his business like regular, does that invalidate the mechiras? Does
it show
that
stuff he didn't sell?
Even though something he didn't sell, that's good.
If he had a proper mechiras chametz, then it's fine.
No, maybe I wasn't being clear. He had Mechiris Chametz, and his business ran like usual. He was buying and selling, everything was running like ever.
He sold the business, the company, to a guy.
Yeah.
Had a manager, so that's for sure for him.
So
he has a good type of Mechiris.
If he does a really... So it depends. Not everybody's even about that stuff, but it depends. So there's a lot of variables over here. That's why it's great.
If it's a lot of variables... correctly.
Then maybe that should be okay. Yes, okay. Yes, that's great. So it's a fuzzy case. It depends on a lot of variables over here and position. Okay, case number D. Okay, the manufacturer had the distributor didn't get it till Pesach. Okay, it was they got a delivery of Cheerios on Pesach. So General Mills owned it before Pesach, and on Pesach the distributor finally got it. So in that case, it's similar to case B, where there it's even better than case B, where it's usher, because here it's not even covered by the mechira. Even if we had a mechira's chametz. He got it on Pesach. It's not covered by the mechira. You can't sell it if you didn't own it.
The paper before Pesach.
So that's a fuzzy. That case is a fuzzier case. Rav Moshe would have said for sure it's not okay. Again, for the other cheshmen here. What's it?
It's clear that it's not going to work. I mean, the start say it's stuff that I'm getting.
So there are those who say that. It's hard to understand. How do you sell something that you didn't buy yet? It's a question. It's hard to understand how that could work. There are people who think like that. I thought this is more traditional. Again, Rav Moshe, who says if you sell on Pesach, for sure would say in this case. The act is in itself an oath taking.
But how does it work? I'm getting that somebody orders something, right, and it comes on Pesach.
Then what?
What?
Then what's your question?
Somehow I'm not eager.
If a box of Cheerios shows up?
Yeah.
You who'd say that? You don't feel like you want to be eager, but that doesn't mean that's the truth.
So what do you do? What do I do? What do people do?
You don't order Cheerios to show up on Pesach. What can I tell you?
You don't tell you
when it shows up at your door.
Okay, so the guy did Mechira.
He doesn't care anything. He's running his business. He doesn't care about people. He's sorry.
What's the Mechira?
Yes, of course.
What's the Mechira to work?
If the distributor was an Erlachit, he closes to the Pesach.
As much effort as he put into Mechira, he wants the benefit of the Mechira, that the stuff shouldn't come off it, right? So
you mean so when it shows up and the guy comes out with a forklift and takes the pallets off of his neck, he's like, oh, I'm not being crazy, it's not mine.
No, you get a proper machine, it's owned by a guy. Now, I don't know, maybe the reason why we said because bittul, maybe it's a bittul you need to, then I hear it, and this guy didn't do bittul, he just did machira, and maybe he's...
Last case is, if the manufacturer had it from before Pesach, and he had it on Pesach, and he didn't sell it to the distributor until after Pesach, excuse me, so then in this case it's mutter. Because it wasn't by Yid until after Pesach. Okay, so... Okay, in my imagination, these are the case I came up with. You can come up with more. Originally I only had four, then I came up with a fifth. There's maybe a sixth afterwards. I'm okay with that. But I'm showing you this first, I'll just go through the cases. But also, it's really more than that. And really it is like this. That means that when I walk into the store, and I know the distributor was Jewish, There's a very big shiloh. What is the box that I'm holding? I'm holding this box of Cheerios now in my hand. Which was this case A, B, C, D, or E? Which case was it, this box that I'm holding? I have no way of figuring out who owned it at which point. Okay, so that in itself adds a layer of suffix to this thing, which is also mitzvah rabbanon. Okay, so some rabbanon says it's a suffix rabbanon. There's no way you could figure out whether the Cheerios are mitzvah rabbanon. Because look, there are some green boxes, and there are orange boxes in there, and there are gray boxes. There's everything in there. So the box that I have, I can't figure out which one it was.
Yeah, you don't know if it's Cheerios Jewish either.
No, see, let's say we know the Shibu is Jewish. So we find out that I live in this place. No, there are people who...
There's 10,000 Protestants.
There are people who know. In this neighborhood, this city, this is who distributes. So I know, I got it. Or I know the beer distributor in New York before he got his Yusham Kugel, before he got his whatever, say, his... Babka, for guys, Babka. He already knew that he distributed the beer for the Shiloh, but who owned that beer over Pesach? So look at all these choices. There's all different theories, and you're going to come up with more of them. So that itself is a layer of suffix that maybe you say something wrong. There were those who thought like that. Others thought not like that. Okay, that's it. It's on. I'm not really sure. Okay, so now, okay, next.
Okay, so this is the one case, you know, where we don't have a choice. Where this. You know, all the products prominently displayed a nice hechsher on the thing.
And it might be kosher.
Yeah, there's nobody to control. There's nobody to...
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm sure there's people out there that, you know, Chumash is a big thing about Chumash and everything, so everybody knows. But, people say, what do you mean? Had an hechsher on that board? Had an hechsher. Like, what's the...
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Three out of five scenarios are awesome.
Two were okay, two were not okay, one was... Depends.
We don't have to be by a chart and bar. Scenario, not the scenario.
Okay. Next, another thing is we're in the time and place, if I were to pull you back into where we were. Okay, that there's a din of Arlah. For the first 3 years that a fruit grows, only from a fruit tree, not from vegetables, for the first 3 years, the fruit is usher as Arlah. It's only for fruits. And it applies to Chutz La'aretz. But special Allah Moshe Sinai, that suffix Arla b'chutz la'aretz is mutter. So for us, we come out and never think about Arla. Because as soon as even there's any fruit out in the market that are mutter, even any suffix that's enough to make it mutter. So it's come out like it has almost nothing to do with us, except if you own a tree in your backyard. Almost we never have a shayla of Arla, because there's always going to be a suffix Arla. Is this apple Arla or is it not Arla? So no, it's a question. It's a suffix. Suffix Arla b'chutz la'aretz is mutter. Okay?
We certified two stores here. How do we take care of Arla?
So for Chutz La'aretz?
No,
I'm coming in one second. I can get there to you. So I said, this is for Chutz La'aretz. For Chutz La'aretz stuff, we come out, not negate to us, okay? What negate to us is from stuff from Eretz Yisrael. And so Suffolk Arla is like any other Israel, okay? Which is negate to us. Citrus fruits is a common thing that they export. That's a fruit. That would be a shiloh of Arla. So now there's a shiloh. How much percentage of a fruit has to be Arla in order for it to be usher in Eretz Yisrael? Okay? We spoke about this in Chutz La'aretz. Okay, if it's a suffix, at what percentage? Let's say if 14% of the oranges are Arla in the market, is that mutter or aser? Am I allowed to eat them or not allowed to eat them? Okay,
you know for sure it's Arla, of course.
I think you know if it's a Suffolk Arla.
Right. You know, no idea what's Arla now.
And you know that in the market, 14% are, so that mutter or aser, am I allowed to eat them? Okay, there's three big sheetas. Some say it has to be more than 50%. Some people say it has to be 10%, like me and Amatsi, that the number comes from. Some people say 5%, okay? We spoke about this in Hilchos Tulaim. But the whole different sheet is about how much percentage it has to be.
Is 5%
number? 5%? It's a good question. We spoke about it then. It's a good question. It's a good question. We spoke about it then. And so what happens like this in Eretz Yisrael, there are groups who make charts of all the percentages of Arla for each fruit. Okay, they say this year, this season, the oranges are this, and the apples are this. All the percentage broken down by all kinds of fruits, and then whatever sheet you like, you fit into your chart. Okay, you fit into your chart. So when someone calls up the office and says,
"The percentage is what's on the market, or
in the market
grown."
But the, how much of the well, the same thing? How much?
They destroy them. I'll be alone. They just destroy them.
Oh, I guess they ignore those fruits. I'm guessing, but that's a good question. So, like, for example. Someone will call up and say, "Hi, I just bought persimmons from Eretz Yisrael. Can I eat them? Can I not eat them?" We look at the chart and says, okay, this year persimmons are X percent, and is that good or is it not good? And we answer them based on that, okay? And you said for our stores, the same thing. There are stores where we give hashgacha to make sure that trumas and maizes are taken from Eretz Yisrael stuff, the same thing for fruits. So if we bang into, I don't know, oranges from Eretz Yisrael, we do the same thing. We say, look, these oranges, are they mutter or usher based on those percentages? Okay?
Such a chart that somebody does it, somebody tracks this.
Yeah, the Eretz Yisrael, the groups that put these things together, the charts of all the fruits in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, I guess, whatever the fruits that they sell, and what percentage of each one is Arla, and then you pick your sheet, and you put it into the thing, and decide which ones you want to eat or not.
When do you get this chart?
I get it every year or 2 years, I don't get it every year. What'd you say?
Ultimately, you might be eating
Merle. So what? And the milk that he drank might have been from a trefa also. But there's a din when you're allowed to eat Minelli. I don't know if you had a coffee. Was that a coffee or your tea?
No,
how come? So it has milk in it also. Yeah. So the milk might have been from a trefa. But there's a din. Sometimes you're allowed to eat something, you're not allowed to eat it. Okay? So it is what it is. You know?
So they work, you know, the entire non-certified plain fruit market, you know, what the percentages are, that it's all.
Correct.
Right. I would imagine within the first 3 years, not so many fruits. Not so many trees get fruit. I mean, they obviously take that into account.
Right, because if they replant things. So yeah, I'll just throw that in for that part, is that you should know, when they started paying attention to this, in Eretz Yisrael started paying attention to it, they then kept track. I forgot the number. The number might have been 900,000, but I might be wrong. It's some crazy large number of fruit trees that were replanted under Hashkacha to make sure they didn't have to restart their early years. Because this sensitivity to make sure things don't become Arla, because of that, they hundreds of thousands, I've got the number, 700,000, 90,000 trees that were replanted, up they didn't, to make it that they don't have to recount the years. Anyway, okay, fine. Okay.
I wonder why, I had these fruit trees, my parents asked me, that was replanted. Mm-hmm. I wonder how they know what the shear is. The shear is enough to live. You have enough dirt to live, you don't have to recount. I don't know, how do they find that out there?
So I'll point you to my book. I just was writing something about it. I'll point you there if you remind me afterwards. Okay. Okay. I'm going to point you. Okay. Next. I have to be up to finish, so we have a nice deal also. Okay. Chumash Marishas, another thing has to do with time and place, what you asked about before. Okay. Tzatzat grows in Eretz Yisrael, needs to be mapped for Chumash Marishas. Until then, the fruit, the stuff is tevel. If you're running on Kalim, you have to kash those Kalim. Okay, we actually had that. Okay, it's like whoever thinks about that here. So in America, one of the things that they export from Eretz Yisrael, it seems they're a big exporter of, is watermelon seeds. Okay, go figure. And we had a company that asked for Hashkacha on their watermelon seeds coming from Eretz Yisrael. So going forward, they were going to get them already, had HaFresh Trumas and Meiser. They were going to get it, it was going to be fine, it wasn't going to be a problem. But the stuff they had used previously did not have that, had not had Truman's Rice steak from it, and it was too late to be mafresh, because it was gone. It had been years of it gone. It couldn't be mafresh anymore at that point. So we kashed kale, that's what we did, actually. So in order to be mafresh, to do hafrasha, you have to think of about 20%. The hafrasha is on about 20%, which is, you take a tiny bit for Truma, then you take off, then you take 10% from Meiser, then 10% of that 10% is Truma's Meiser, so far you took off 10% in a drop, and then you take off another 10%, either in some years from Meiser Sheni, that's years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of Shemitah's Meiser Sheni, and in years 3 and 6 of Shemitah, you take off Meiser Ani, another 10%. So in the end, you've taken off, give or take, 20% of the stuff has been separated. Okay, but all of that is mutter for people to eat, except for the Truma, which is the tiny bit you took at the beginning, and the 10% of 10%, which is another 1%, that's also, those are Truma, which is, it's Tameh, you can't eat it, and the Kaihanama Tameh, you can't eat it. So that one, a little more than 1% ends up being not usable. So you have to discard it or get rid of it. Again, if you put that on your kale, you have to cash the kale for that also. But and then the rest is okay. Okay, so this is negated to all kinds of things that come from Eretz Yisrael. Carrots, peppers, as you know, going on now, citrus fruits, and then there's things like lemon oil. Okay, lemon oil comes from Eretz Yisrael. That's also Chayim Chumash Maaser. Okay. Last in this section is our favorite for this year, is because of Shemitah. Okay, that things that grow during the Shemitah year, like this year, have special dinim to them. We don't, the American Hashgachas and the Maharjan Israeli ones don't accept the Het Mechira. So the two big issues that we have to deal with are, here in America are Svichin, which is vegetable, things that we planted every year, vegetables and herbs and things like that, they're Usur, if they're Shemitah produce, and Kedusha Shviyas, which is things that grow during Shemitah, have Kedusha Shviyas, you have to treat them properly. Okay, in Punkt, we have a mix of those actually going on right now, the peppers right now. They have Kedusha Shviyas, and they're Shiloh Svichin. They're not Svichin, but they're a Shiloh there. Okay, one day we'll talk about those also. Okay, so last thing we have to talk about is Kalim. Okay, so we talked about a bunch of different ways that things can be treif. And all things we talked about now, I tried to talk about were things that were inherently treif. Like, something was Shemitah, Svichin, so Svichin is Usur. The Svichin is Usur. And now, the last thing we have to talk about is Kalim. And that is, all the things that we talked about are, the thing itself is treif. But there's also a whole din of tam kikr that makes it that all kinds of things become treif because they were on the same kalim as those things that were treif. Okay? For example, you remember, I'm sure you remember from last time this chart, of fatty acids. Okay? I'm sure you memorized all those little numbers on there. And this is different oils and fats, and which fatty acids they have in them. Okay, if I can remind you, an oil or a fat is comprised of two parts, is glycerin, and glycerin is attached to three fatty acids. And the glycerin is exactly the same for all oils and fats, but depending on the fatty acids, the mix of fatty acids that are there, that dictates the properties of corn oil, why corn oil is different than lard, why it has different properties, a different boiling point, and all kinds of things. It has to do with the different mix of fatty acids that it has in them. Okay? The fatty acids are considered the more valuable part of these than the glycerin part. Okay? So in order to get a fatty acid, so let's take lauric acid. Okay? So you want to get lauric acid. So if you look on the chart, you see that a really good place to get lauric acid from is from coconut oil. Okay? Coconut oil is almost half of the fatty acids in coconut oil are lauric acid. Okay, 47%. It's a great place to get lauric acid from.
How else would we get it?
What?
How else would we get it?
Nothing else on this chart has it, right? So it's in minor pieces on some other things, and they made another oil that I'm not thinking of, okay? But for us, that's a really common place to get it from is coconut oil, like you see yourself. You looked at the chart, you said, obviously you get it from coconut oil, okay? So lauric acid should be kosher, comes from coconut oil. Okay. The problem is, so Etzin, it's kosher because coconuts are kosher. So coconut oil would be kosher, and the lauric acid should always be kosher. But in fact, we say it needs hashkacha. Because to get the lauric acid out of the coconut oil, you have to do two big steps to get it out. Okay. The first is, it's called a splitter. You have to split the glycerin from the fatty acids. I told you, the oil is glycerin with fatty acids. How do you do that? You put it into this huge machine, I mean, huge, like 100 feet tall. You put it in this machine that splits it at very high temp, like 800 degrees Fahrenheit, under tremendous amount of pressure, and it splits the glycerin from the fatty acids. Okay, that's the first thing you have to do, is you have to split the glycerin from the fatty acids. Then, once you've split them, now you have this mix of fatty acids, okay, you have this mix of fatty acids, and those fatty acids have to then be distilled. You have to put them through a still so that the lauric acid goes this way, and the caprylic acid goes this way, and the palmitic acid goes that way. You have to divide, you have this now soup of fatty acids, you have to divide them so that you get only lauric acid as your thing. So there's a little difference in boiling point between lauric acid and palmitic acid. So by distilling it, you get just one, what's called fraction, out and leave the other fraction go a different way. Okay? So you have this mix of fatty acids and you divide them into the ones you want to. Now, those two processes I just described, the splitting and the distillation, both are hot, and both could also be used for animal fat. Okay, the same kalim that do that job, in fact, and they are. Coconut oil has a lot of properties and similar to other animal fats. So the same kalim would be used to split animal fat and then to distill the same thing. In animal fat, you're not trying to get lauric acid. You're trying to get, stearic acid out. So you're trying to separate their soup of fatty acids and get out those fractions. So first you have to split it. For all of them, you have to split them. And then you have to distill them. So, mamela, you're going to use the same kalim. So that's why lauric acid is considered that it needs hashkacha, because not because we think it comes from animals. It's really unlikely it comes from animal products. But the reason is because of the kalim that it's made on. Okay? For example, in laundry grade, on the set aside, things that are non-food use, lauric acid is no problem, because we know it doesn't come from animals. Okay? It's assumed that it doesn't come from animals. Okay, so now, so here's the rule of the short version of the rule of how you break down fatty acids. Okay, fatty acids we would break them down into these three groups. There's the short chain fatty acids. Okay, let's have the opposite end, on the right end, the long chain fatty acids that are 14, 16, or 18, palmitic and stearic and myristic. What?
C.
C is how many carbons there are. The chain, it's a chain of 14 carbons or 12. The amount of carbons, that's a... Okay, so the long chain ones could come from vegetable or animal fat. Those are the most serious. Okay, those could actually be inherently treif, the ones in the long chain fatty acids. The medium chains are like, you ever see like MCT oil? Like medium chain triglycerides? That's what this is. Okay, the medium chains, okay, which is 6, 8, 10, or 12, caprylic, capric, or lauric. Excuse me, those are the medium chains. Those commonly come from coconut oil or some other vegetable oils. And those are assumed to come from a kosher source, but they need hashkacha because the kale that they're made on, that those processes I just described to you, are can be done with animal products as well. And then the short chain, the acetic and butyric, the C2s and C4s, those are not don't come from these things, but they're a klal. They come from other processes that don't have such shilas to them, and those are going to be okay, whoever they come from. Okay, they can come from animal products, but almost never. So those are okay no matter what. Okay. Okay. What do you say? Well, acetic acid, in this case, we're not talking about acetic acid like you. I'm talking about in a product, ethyl acetate. So the acetic version of that is assumed to come from this stuff. It's not the acetic acid like as in if someone's using just plain acetic acid. Okay, anyhow. Okay, now, another a variation of what I just told you. Okay, when you make corn oil, okay, corn oil, like, not corn oil for fatty acids, corn oil, just corn oil as it is, okay? So corn oil comes from corn, okay? So what could be wrong with corn oil? Okay, corn oil is corn. It's fine. What could be wrong with that? So inherently, it's kosher. The problem is that oils have an odor to them. It's actually a din shulchan aruch about that, that they have an odor to them. And before they send it to your house for you to cook with it, they deodorize it. They remove odor. They deodorize it. They take out the odor. Okay, the deodorizing is a type of still. Not the same one I described before, but it's a type of a still. What you're doing basically is you're boiling out those fragrances, the parts that you don't like, and you're distilling them out and leaving behind the oil that you do like. Okay, so the deodorizer that you use for corn oil can also be used to deodorize animal fat also. Okay, so the shaila of the reason why vegetable oils and vegetable and seed oils in hashkacha is because of the concern that maybe it was deodorized on kale leaves, seed oils like. I think actually corn may be a seed oil. I mean, whatever. These kind of things is because the chash is that deodorizing might be happening on kaolin that we use for non-kosher. Okay? When I say these kind of oils, that's different than essential oil. Okay? Essential oils are, you steam to get the essential part of like a herb. Okay? Like mint essential oil is, you put mint through steam to get the flavorful part out of the mint into an oil rather than having to have the actual leaves. Okay, those are fine. Those don't need to go.
So you're saying the process is different. Corn is crushed, squeezed, as opposed to
corn. Well, steam. No, the process is not what I'm focusing on. And when you make corn, however you get the oil out of it, sometimes it's with a solvent, sometimes it's by crushing. That's not the sensitive part of it. Okay. The problem is, once I have the corn oil, I have a container of corn oil, I now have to deodorize it to make it taste better.
So but I don't do that. Don't need to deodorize.
Right, they're not deodorized. No, they are. Actually, the odor there is what you want. The fragrance of the mint oil is what you want.
So what defines, so what's the definition of an essential oil?
An essential oil is when you find something flavorful, like rosemary, and you don't want to use the actual rosemary, you want the flavor from that thing. You want the flavor from that, so it's an essential oil. There's a process to get the flavor out of the rosemary so you can have rosemary oil. Okay?
Well,
it's the corn oil. So it's a corn oil, you want the oil, not the flavorful part of it, so to speak. So
why is it given the name essential?
It's an ikar. This is the main part of the rosemary. Rosemary is not because it's so pure, it's nice little leaves. The main part is the oil that's in there. That's the flavor of it. As opposed to the leaf. You don't want the leaf.
The oil is what has the good...
It's what you want. And the oil in the corn also, but it's a seed oil. Like this is, I don't know, this is a seed oil. This is like a vegetable oil, and this is an herb. I don't know. Okay.
Well, soybean oil. No one wants soybeans. They just want oil.
Well, some people want soybeans, but it's a different thing. Okay, next. Another thing is, there are times that you have something, and you want to get the liquid out of it. You want to dry it out. In order to get the liquid out of it, okay? So those dryers, as you know, those dryers are things that could be used for kosher and treif also. So an example, just to bring out the case for right over here, is if you had dried hibiscus, okay, like vitamin C, dried hibiscus is on a really simple dryer that it's only used for herbs and vegetable things. So we don't have to worry about those kalim. But if you wanted hibiscus PE, hibiscus powdered extract, that is a liquefied version of hibiscus that was then dried, so there we have a chashash of here. So if anything that's dried, as you know, something that's straight dried, or drums dried, things like that, we worry about what else was dried on those kaolin, because they can be used for anything. Okay? Okay, two more things. One is, if you have a food that needs to be heated, either to make it edible, or to make it not spoil. So then we usually, we need to heat it in order to either make it edible or to make it not spoil. And that, again, can be used for kosher and for treif. So if I make ketchup, and the ketchup has only kosher ingredients, so it's kosher. It's inherently kosher. There's nothing in it. Look at the ingredients. They're all kosher. But you have to cook ketchup in order to make it. So we're concerned that kettle was used for something else that was not kosher. Okay? Or if you have canned corn, what's in this corn and salt and water? What there's nothing trace inherently. There's nothing trace about it. But it's processed on a retort that cooks it. So mamela, what else was put on it? Maybe the thing before it was pork and beans. Okay, so that mamela, it needs hashkach. Okay, and so that's only when we concern that the retort abuse of both. I'll throw in. I'm going to confuse you. That canned fruit is not like that. Okay, and bulk. Pasteurization meals, don't worry so much about that. Okay, too fast I said that. Okay, next. Last is, we are concerned that Tam not only goes into a kli, but goes through the walls of a kli into the steam system. So when we give hashkacha, we think about not only was the kettle used to cook ketchup, and maybe beforehand it was used for something else, but maybe the next kettle over was used for something trafe, and it affected the steam system. Okay, so here there's an interesting twist to that, which is that even though we care about that, and we pay attention to that when we give hashkacha, when we think about things at group one, we don't pay attention to that. We ignore that. That's a good question. Why? But that's pretty accepted. Maybe in that same plane they were doing something else in their steam system, on the same kalim. Yeah, okay, so that they're doing something on the same kalim that they do think about. Should we let this be group one within the same kalim? Should it be group one? The fact that maybe the steam system is being used for something else, that's sort of people.
Of course, if we know what certified and say, well,
I said, do you think of Hashkacha? No, well, you say, just ship it to the next company, the next place, then it'll be okay. Okay, so just to wrap up what I was just trying to, my point here was that the inherent things that are inherently trait, there's a very limited scope of them. Okay, we try to map out all the ones we could think of, all the limited scope of things that are actually inherently treif. But this last group, which is things that are made on treif kalim, in my mind, affects many more things than the things that are inherently treif. We don't run into things that are actually treif. Even though I listed, 18 of them. I came up with 18 things that could be wrong with something that can make a treif. That's harder to bang into. We don't bang into that so often. But to run into things that are treif because of kalim is a more serious challenge. Now, in fact, on a commercial level, kalim is not such a serious concern. B'dieved is usually not such a concern. But in practice, we are choshish. Think about that, something made on treif kalim. So I have a feeling that covers more items. There are more items that are affected, that need hashkacha because of that, than things that are because they're inherently treif.